This is Vermont Edition Presents. I'm Jane Lindholm. On today's episode, The Same Moon, Vermont storytellers sharing tales of migration, recorded live at VPR in January. The Same Moon started as a focus of The Telling Project, a storytelling program designed to help veterans share their experiences. The Same Moon expands that focus to stories of migration. This is The Same Moon's first production in Vermont. Here's The Same Moon, recorded live at VPR.
Subhanallah. Dadkan waa ayo. Xageeban anigu ka imi. Meeshaan maxaa keenay? Cadaan badana. Yaa.
Assalamu alaykum.
Yaa, adiguna xageeba ka
imi. Min dawaa sururiino aljeela nawdih lakum.
Wa aqwan.
Wa kull alhajat an nahna aleena fi baladi.
Kull
Gente de las llanuras, flatlanders.
Do you know what the people from the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont call them strangers that come up here to take pictures?
What?
Flatlanders.
Because,
you know, sir, Vermont have the most beautiful mountain. And them don't have none which part them come from.
But Nepal has amazing mountains as well. What about Nepali people?
Flatlanders star.
And people from Ghana?
Flatlanders.
Let me guess. People from Somalia?
Flatlanders.
Wait. People from DRC?
Flatlanders.
So I guess we all have that in common, right?
Recuerdos de la infancia, childhood memories.
My name is Derek. I have never seen another human being as kind and caring as my mother. I can remember very vividly a bunch of guys and myself, we always do this on weekends or days when we don't have school. We'd push our bicycle up top of the hill and ride down at breakneck speed. I can remember one day, about six of us push our bikes up there and we start coming down the hill very fast. As we came around the corner, there were a trillium across the road. I mean, naturally, we tried to get away from it, but I tripped. couple of guys with me and fell. Broke up my bike, tore up my sneakers. The other weekend, there was going to be a dance, and I already prepared, planned to go to that dance. Now, I had no sneakers to wear. I got my only pair of shoes. So I went to my mom said to me, but Tony, you won't be able to go to the dance this weekend because you don't have a pair of sneakers. You know, I thought about it for a minute, then I turned to her and I said, Mom, can you lend me your sneakers so I can wear to the dance?
Really?
Quite honestly, without even a thought, a blink of an eye, she said, yes, Tony, you can take my sneakers, wear to the dance. So I wore my mother's sneakers to the dance that weekend, my girlfriend didn't mind. She has made so many sacrifices for her children. I have never loved and will never love anyone as much as I love my mother.
My Hoya Fosia always said that she was a very good Somali girl. She never went anywhere. She always cleaned the house. She lived with my grandmother. She was a model kid. Then one day, she met my Abba, Umar, and he was this dusty village kid from another tribe. They started writing letters to one another and eventually fell in love. One day they decided to elope without telling my grandmother. When my mom came home, she got a really good whipping. They weren't allowed to see each other for a year. Soon after, they decided to go to court, and both families did not agree with the union. The judge turned to my parents, well, they didn't know it at the time, I guess, to the kids, and asked them what they wanted. And they said they wanted to be married. So that is what happened.
In my country, Sudan, it was difficult for girls to get an education. But my grandmother and grandfather believed that they should educate their daughter, my mom. They believed that education would give her confidence, that she would trust in herself to make good choices for herself and also for her kids. My mother was educated, and my father also educated. He was an accountant. They believed that I should be educated.
As a child in a refugee camp, I understood that money was difficult. I entertained myself as cheaply as possible. Long rocks were perfect for pretending they were phones. Anything circular could be a soccer ball. For example, old socks, plastic bags, condoms, anything. Being a kid, that was all we knew. It was our happiness. You either accepted it or you'd be unhappy.
I was born into generational poverty. My dad was around, but he was not really in my life. I was brought up by my mom. My mom worked at a market, and that was where I found a shop owner who I started helping to make some few cedis to help my mom pay for my school fees. Later on in life, I was adopted by my uncle, who did not have a child of his own. I lived with my uncle, and after high school, I decided to be a professional soccer player because I played a lot of soccer every stage of my life, and I was good at it. My uncle discouraged me from being a pro soccer player. He would rather have me continue school. I shared with my mom that I want to join the Ghana Army. That was a different dream. And my mom also discouraged me from joining the army because she knew I would be killed. I had to listen to both of them.
My name is Rakutu Razafi Mikael Anatol. But everyone calls me Mika.
Mika, Mika, Mika.
My nickname growing up was Mika Haley, which means Little Mika. I grew up in Tuamas on the east coast of Madagascar. There were six kids in my family, two girls and four boys. I'm the second to last. We didn't have radio and no TV. My parents sang and we played games when we went to bed. My mother told me that even when I was 3 years old, I was already singing. Mm. When I was a little older, I started to teach myself how to play instruments. I played guitar. Later, I taught myself the valiya. Valiya is a very famous instrument in Madagascar. It's made in bamboo, 18 strings. Mm. I didn't go too far in school. I loved school. I got good grades, but we were in a hard situation. When I got to high school, sometimes we didn't even have food to eat. Mm. My parents couldn't afford to pay for all of us to go to our schooling. We discussed it as a family, and we decided that my parents would pay for my second oldest brother to go to university so that he could support the family in the future. Mm. He took on that responsibility.
Mm. My name is Timba Shasha. If you need to call me Timba.
Timba.
Timba. Timba.
Thank you. When I was five, my dad came home from work every day. Twice a week, he said, Timba, let's go to do the boxing club. We will go see if you want to be a boxer. I watched it for one week, then 2 weeks, then 3 weeks. I said, Dad, this sport interests me. I told you that this sport interests me. I want to do it. So I start training. My dad, the friends, the coach said, Simba, drop a do push up. I had never tried push ups before. He said, drop one, two, three. You know. Then I start crying.
Oh no.
This is difficult, you know.
Oh baby.
He said, you need to complete 50. Guys, one, two, three, I'm start crying. Complete 50.
You can imagine.
I won't sleep that night, so tired. Next morning, at 4 a.m., you know, 4 a.m., good sleep.
Still dark.
Coach woke me up. We are going to for 3 hours running fast. See, after 1 hour, I said, I'm too tired. Please call taxi. See, I don't have money.
He said that.
To pay the taxi. Is a call another friend boxing scare me back. Because then after 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I was getting strong. The coach say, you are going to fight in the boxing match. I was 5.
How was it?
The boys, while I was fighting, was 7. Look at the difference, 2 years. Odd. Oh, he was tall,
big,
bigger, more, you know.
Way more.
Yes. We were in the ring, inside the ring, where Cam told me, I was standing up the city championship. I lost because I'm different for them. I told my father, he said, okay. And his present is give me in a box. Inside they have gloves, shoes, and mouth gum to protect the teeth. And the medicine, you know the medicine? Protect my face when they punch me. I said, I must win. But the day of the city championship, the guys I was fighting was very big. I was 45 pounds. He was 57. Look at the difference. My coaches see me, say, this guy is scared. Timber is calling Timber.
Focus.
Focus. Relax.
Relax.
And I win.
Yeah.
I win the championship. Yeah,
okay.
Estos son trasfondos de los inmigrantes. These are immigrant backstories.
Like I said before, my name is Derek. Derek Sr., as a matter of fact. I was born in Jamaica countryside in a parish of Portland. I had 6 sisters. I was the only boy. Not spoiled. My dad worked for the government as an accountant. My mom, she was a seamstress. She was the kind of a seamstress that you rarely find these days. She has a book with a lot of different type of ladies' dress in their shirts and stuff. So what she would do, she would give you the book, you pick out the dress, she'd take your measurement, give you some time to come back, and that lady could bill anything you want for a lady, also for guys. Mm. And then there were my grandmothers. My mom's mother, I learned most of my cooking skills from. I have so many happy memories from growing up in Jamaica. Because of that, I have this very tight bond or connection to that country. After high school, I went to trade school to learn machinist. I finished, tried to get a job in town of Port Antonio. There were just one machine shop, and it's hard to get in there because you get in once, you don't want to leave that place because the opportunities isn't there again. So I moved to Kingston. I lived in Kingston for a while. I'm just kind of running around with some of the undesirable guys. My father, he was working in Montego Bay at the Holiday Inn, and he got me a job there at the front desk, as a front desk clerk. Mm. I worked there for a while, but the pay wasn't so good. So I started, bought a taxi and started doing a little business on the side, running a taxi. I did that for a while, and then by then, I had two sons, Derek Jr. and Theodore. Mm. It's funny, but I always wanted to treat those two guys like gold.
Mm. After I stopped school at 16 or 17, I didn't have anything to do, but music was in my heart. Mm. So I played in the streets. Mm. Or I hung out with friends. I started drinking because I was depressed. Mm. I was bad, really bad feeling. Mm. All the men of my family drunk. My father drank until he died. Mm. My oldest brother drank until he died. Mm. One day, I was very drunk. Someone came to me and said, "Somebody wants to talk to you." He was the owner of a recording studio. So I went to talk to him the next day. He said, "Mika, you have to stop drinking. You are very talented. I would like you to take care of your talent. Stop drinking." I have a bunch of instruments. I have a studio if you want to learn about computer and recording studio. Now, I didn't want to go party with friends anymore. I just want to make music.
Yep.
Day and night. I wrote the songs or sat by hand the computer. In 1994, I recorded a song for the Alliance Française Song Contest. It was called Ambani Volo. It means countryside. It is about how people should look after the forest and the animals. Mm. people really like the song. Wow. I'm happy about that. Yeah. I won. Yeah. Then I started recording songs with some of legendary Malagas and European musicians. I built a relationship. I started to make money, little money, and it felt good.
You win.
I could now help my mother. In 2004, my song "Tistingi" won the Francophone Music Contest.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Good job.
Keep going. Yeah, Mika. The songs mean "Don't worry, everything will be fine." It was an international competition, and people from Canada and Europe started to like my music. In 2005, I collaborated with a famous Malagasy songwriter, and it was a huge success. Yeah. Now, I had to start to get recognized. When the kids saw me, they were screaming, "Mika!
Mika!
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 Mika!"
I have always been a bit shy.
Oh, oh boy.
There were more hits.
Yeah.
My band turned Europe. Now I was playing all the time. I was a saxophone musician. I was famous. I didn't plan it. But that is what happened. I just believe in Zangahari, the god of the Malagasy people and all of us.
Okay.
As I said, I was adopted by my uncle. I have most of my best childhood memories with my uncle. May his soul rest in peace. I left my uncle's house after about 10 years living with him in tears because I had a fallout with him. But as the saying goes, when one door is shut, another one is open. So another door was open for me through a friend that I went to high school with in a different part of Ghana. And I went to visit this friend. This friend was fortunate enough to have his dad open a cultural center where people from Europe and the United States go and learn Ghanaian and African culture. It was there that I met a member of one of the groups from Vermont known as Vermont Global Village Project. On their return to the U.S., this friend who was a nurse at Fletcher Allen Hospital extended an invitation for me to come visit Vermont. That was when I got my first passport. Exciting. Then I applied for my visa. Anyone who knows how the visa process goes, coming from a different country to the U.S., there should be something that ties you down to your country so that when you get a visitor's visa, the immigration, the embassy knows that you return to your country at the end of your visit. And I had three ties to Ghana. One being I was married. Two, I had a child. And three, I was a middle school social studies teacher. So based on those three conditions, they knew at the end of my visit, I'll return to Ghana. Based on that, again, my visa was issued. I got a visitor's visa to visit the U.S.
Congratulations.
In 1978, I left Jamaica for a job with Carnival Cruise Lines. I started working on the Mardi Gras as a busboy. Within about 8 months, I was given my waiter's jacket. It was such fun. It was like freedom. Mm-hmm. I worked on the ship for about 9 years. Mm. I knew the ship like the back of my hands. Mm. People would say to me, "But Derek, that work is very difficult. It's hard." For me, it was not hard. I wanted something more out of life, and that enabled me to get it. And then I met Shelley. Mm. I got to tell you about Shelley.
Oh, no. Oh, boy.
That Sunday, I was supposed to go on vacation. Generally, you work 8 months, and then you take 2-3 months off. I was supposed to leave for vacation that Sunday. The maitre d' came to me and said, Derek, at the end of the Sunday when he finished cleaning up, I'm sorry, but you have to work another week. I wasn't happy about it because I've worked 8 months. I need to go have some fun. Not that I wasn't having fun before. So we got the ship sailed. All the waiters generally go lined in the dining room, facing the entrance, and the passengers come in. You pick them up, you bring them to your station, you go back. Generally, the guys would be, you know, like peeking over each other's shoulder to see who is the next pretty girl coming down the aisle to take her to their station. The maitre d' would say, "Guys, come on, man, behave yourselves. Get back in line over there. What's the matter with you? They're coming in the ship." We say, "Okay." The minute he turns his back, we go the same thing. So I was in the line, I look over there, and I saw this beautiful young lady coming down the aisle. I forced myself forward, hold her hand, took her to my station. I served her every day that week. The second day she came for dinner, I tried to invite her out when the ship docked. She said, "Nope, no way, it's not happening." But I wouldn't stop. I kept pestering her because I'm serving her, so she can't get up off at the station and leave. So I can't get into that, but I tricked her one at a time. Anyway, we've been married now for 35 years. Same girl. This is the funny part of it, because after a few years, she said to me, "Derek, you know what I was thinking? Why I kept telling you no, you're not taking me out? Oh, I didn't want, I, why would I want to go out with this short, funny speaking, black guy?" You know what I'm saying? It's like, so, but I tell you something, persistence.
Persistence
got me right here today.
Yeah.
Home next. Also, I have a love story. In 2012, I met Maya, a blonde, beautiful American woman, at one of my concerts. She was the director of a local nonprofit. We fell in love.
Oh,
so cute. My music continued. My life is a long story. Some of it good, some of it sad. In 2003, my father died. In 2010, my oldest brother died. Very tight. Then, in 2013, my older brother, the one who was the breadwinner for the family, died in the Congo. It was a big shock for my family. My music continued. My life with Maya continued. We got married in a beautiful traditional Malagasy wedding. I dread this. Nice. Sir. it's made in Lambawani. It's very famous in Madagascar, the Lambawani. So when you want to marry a woman, you give her Lambawani.
Oh.
Isn't cute? We decide to move to the United States. We started to figure out how to make that happen. It was a lot of work and took over a year.
I was Hoya and Abba's favorite, I mean third, child. Shortly after I was conceived, Abba went to the United States because he had been sponsored by my uncle, Ali, leaving my sister, Hawa, and my brother, Mohammed, and my mother behind back in Baran, in our village of Somalia. I was a very curious and adventurous little girl. I remember when I was about 4 or 5, trying to herd my grandparents' goats inside for the night, something that I volunteered to do. So here I was, getting them all in. No one had told me that there had been a hyenas. I got most of them in. They took two.
You lost them.
When I got back inside, I got yelled at for the said two. But I had no idea. I mean, I was 5. Anyway, that was Somalia. It demanded responsibility from the get-go. And that was our normal. No coddling. All the while, Abba worked as a janitor in Penn Station. We would make cassette tapes. This was the 90s. We'd make cassette tapes, and we'd send some, and he'd send some back, and he would tell us about his day, and we'd tell him how much we missed him and sing him songs. We never really felt abandoned because we had so many displays of affection from Abba. In 1996, I was 7, and Abba was ready to bring us to the United States. Woo!
Yeah, ready.
First, we spent 2 to 3 months in Djibouti. We stayed with extended family who were very well off. They had a maid, and electricity, and Coca-Cola. We watched Arabic soap operas. It was very, very glamorous. The clothes, the restaurants. It was the first time that I had noticed that I was poor, because in Baran there were no displays of wealth. Abba picked us up in Djibouti. We had never seen each other before. He was so tall and skinny. I remember falling in love with him right away.
Estos son trasfondos de los refugiados. These are refugee backstories.
My story actually starts in the late 1800s. No, I'm not that old. But that was when the Bhutanese government needed farmers and offered struggling Nepalese free land, which seemed great. So thousands of Nepalese moved their whole lives. At first, they felt accepted and welcomed. Over the years, the Nepali population grew, and the Bhutanese monarchy felt threatened. They started to push the Nepalese out. It began subtly, but by the 1980s, the Bhutanese were subjecting ethnic Nepalis to intimidation, violence, and exploitation. They were saying, "We don't want you anymore." And so the ethnic Nepalese left the land that had been given to their great-great-grandparents. They tried to re-enter Nepal, but they weren't Nepalese citizens. With nowhere to go, they settled in 7 refugee camps in the east of Nepal. My parents settled in one of these camps, Timai, in 1992. By refugee camp standards, ours was pretty good, which feels really strange to say. It was densely populated. The huts were made out of bamboo and straw. My mom, dad, sister, brother, and I lived in a hut that my dad had built. You could hear your neighbors snoring at night, or anything else. There was no privacy. There was one outhouse for every 2 huts. There were 5 to 10 water taps in the whole camp. You'd have to get up in the morning and get in line for water, and the lines were very long. My dad was charismatic, and he made friends with a bunch of locals. They gave him some work, and as payment, they'd give him a small plot of land to grow vegetables, firewood, and maybe a buck or two. Once, he went to India to work as a security guard and made about 60,000 rupees, but he ended up having to spend nearly half of it on medical bills after he was accidentally electrocuted.
I finished high school and went to Anilen University to get a degree in accounting. I got a job working as a banker. I married my husband, Amir. We had a son, Ahmed. He was 4 years old when our story begins. My husband worked as a taxi driver. He drove a minibus. One day in May 2008, Amir didn't come back home. People said that there had been a failed attack on the palace of the president of Sudan, Omar al-Bashir. We heard that they caught some people trying to attack specific ministries of the government. Nobody knows what had happened to Amir. We started to ask questions in hospital, police station. We knew nothing for a month. Ahmed missed his father. He was only 4 years old. He asked, "Where is my dad?" I didn't have an answer. After a month, one of Amir's brother friend, who worked for the Sudanese military, saw Amir getting dropped off at the hospital. When we saw him, he looked very bad. He didn't speak. When you ask him any questions, just he looked at you. He stayed like that for 3 weeks. Finally, we hear what was happening. On the day he had gone missing, Amir had picked up men who were dressed like Sudanese government military. They said they needed to go to the television station in Omdurman. Amir started to drive. Soon, another car started to follow them. One of the men put a gun in his bag and said, "Don't stop, just drive." They were not Sudanese government soldiers. They were a member of the Justice and Equality Movement led by Dr. Khalil Ibrahim. They came from the West Sudan and wanted to change Omar al-Bashir government because it was very corrupted situation in my country, and all the resources in my country they sold to the other countries and they put the money in their pockets. It was why everything in my country was miserable. From education, medical services, basic foods were very expensive. The people were suffering. That's why Dr. Khalil Ibrahim wanted to change the government. In the middle of the town, the other car started shooting at the minibus. Amir got a pellet in his shoulder. One of the men in the minibus passed away, and everyone else was arrested. They took Amir to question him. They kicked and punched him. "You are Justice and Equality. You were with them. Tell us information." For a month, they investigated him. Finally, when he was too injured, they left him at the hospital. At that time, I was scared. My whole life was turned upside down. Our friends advised us to escape from Sudan. We didn't have a lot of saving. We sold our house. We sold everything because Amir was blacklisted. We had to pay a lot of preps to get papers and passport stamps to go through the airport and get on the plane to Egypt.
By 2008, after 16 years in Timai, my dad had finally had enough. He applied for resettlement. It was a long, lengthy process that took 9 months total. There were checkups, shots, documentations, database, blah, blah. It was a slow process. We kept it quiet that we were resettling because some of the refugees felt that resettling was betraying the cause to go back to Bhutan. But we left anyway and flew to the United States.
We landed in Cairo on July 17, 2008. Amir had some friends home took care of us. He spent another 2 months in the hospital in Cairo. In October, we went to the United Nations to ask for protection. Even in Cairo, the Sudan embassy had ICE. And you know, everywhere, they might arrest us and took us again back to Sudan. We needed protection. It was a terrible feeling. If you feel fear in Sudan, people behind me, my family, when you have a child, your main dream to have good life for him. and you want your husband to protect you. And you try to make his family happy. At that time, my son was just 4 years. My husband was broken inside. I must fight to protect both of them and me also. The United Nations gave us a yellow card, which means they accepted our case, and they will protect us until they find us a third country where we could have political asylum. We stayed in Egypt from 2008 to 2013. They were the hardest years. There were good people in Egypt, but was also a lot of crime. Finally, the International Organization of Migration approved us and told us that we were going to go to the United States.
Oh, Simba.
Simba.
Simba. I was tell you another story of my life. I went to the Naki Valley refugee camp in Uganda with my family in 2011. I was 13 years old. I made friends who were Uganda policemen. They said, "You doing boxing?" I said, "Yes." I can cheat you. I can also teach you judo and kickboxing. Every day, if you need it. Then they said to me, "Be careful. You are strong. Don't fight. If you fight, then we will put you in the jail." Wow. I said, for me, this is sport. If a boxer is a good man, he will never fight anyone. I will only fight if you touch my family. I need to protect my family in the refugee camp. And most people are crazy. I will protect my family. But the boxing it's caused me a problem. I lost 2 teeth.
Oh no.
Poor. Outside. When I came to the United States in 2017, I really did it, no smile. I make this one because I'm not having teeth. But now I have my teeth correct. Thank you.
America al principio. America at first.
We landed in New York City, which was big and busy and bright. For the first 8 years of my life, I went by the name Ifrah. A name my mother, Hoyo, which is mom in Somali, affectionately named me. It translates to happy. Abba's first order of business when we arrived in the United States was to change my legal name to Sahara.
So as I said earlier, I got my visa, and then I bought my plane ticket the first week in September of 2001. Mm. I was supposed to fly to the U.S., but then 9/11 happened. Mm. I did not have any connections with the United States, but the images I saw on TV made me shed tears. Mm. I remember arriving at JFK and coming off the plane in September of 2001. I was slapped in the face by the cold breeze. Mm. The beautiful buildings in New York impressed me. I was met by my next friend at the airport who drove me to Vermont. Mm-hmm. I saw the beautiful Green Mountains, Ghana landscape is relatively flat, so that was a big difference.
Couldn't resist. The first time I visited Vermont with Shelley was very, very cold. I didn't know that was just fall. I mean, I could not believe the trees. They had no leaves. I thought, honestly, they were dead. I said to Shelley, but in Jamaica, I've never seen that. The leaves are on the tree all the time. She laughed and said, don't worry about it. In the spring, the leaves will come back. Honestly, didn't have a clue.
When we landing in Miami Airport, we saw Mexican, Latino, European, African. We felt relaxed. Why? Because when you saw many people mixed in one place, that means it's a good place. Where people find safety, they will stay.
Yes.
When my family and I left Nepal, we were told we'd be coming to Columbus, Ohio.
Woo!
Then we arrived at Rochester Airport in New York, and a case manager greeted us saying, welcome home. So we just said, okay.
My name is Timba.
Oh, it's me, Timba.
Timba.
Timba!
Timba!
2015, my case manager picked me and my family up from the airport. They took us to our house in Winooski. The next morning, I woke up. The street was so quiet. I handled a dog and handled the car pass. I said to my brother, this is no good.
So quiet.
My brother said, anything. I'm going to need to, I tell my brother, need adapted. This hair, silly. Thank you.
Timba! At first, we lived in an apartment in Jersey City. My family, my parents worked really hard to create a close family dynamic. Abba worked at night, but we would sit down, get all dolled up per mom's request, and eat dinner together. Then we would read the Quran, and then we'd watch some television. We were very happy.
I visited the States with Maya for the first time in 2016, landing in New York and visiting Manhattan was amazing. We took buses and trains and visited a lot of her friends and family all up and down the East Coast. It was so much fun. But I had one problem. Getting on the bus in Boston. The bus driver didn't see my ticket when Maya showed her both of our tickets, and he yelled at me to get off the bus. And he said, get off the bus. But I remember at that time, at that moment, before we left in Malaga, Maya, she got injury on his her foot. So, and we have a big tooth case, and I have to take care of that. Suitcase, and she get on the bus, and I still take care of the case, and so the bus driver, he just look at Maya's ticket, but he didn't look at my tickets, and Maya just thought everything is okay, and when I get on the bus, and he said, get on the bus. And, you know, I like to, you know, this is my own
style.
Always like this. I don't know. Maybe if I, like, I'm like a little homeless people. I don't know. I said, no, I had the tickets. I'm going to stay on the bus. And Maya, she had seat really back seat. And she didn't hear what's going on there.
Yeah.
And everybody just didn't say anything. And he said, the bus driver, he said he gonna call the police. Yeah. He treat me to call the police. In 2017, I finally got my visa and came to the United States to live. We arrived in mid-August and had to get married within 90 days, according to the conditions of my visa. We got married before the end of the month. First, I lived in Maine. That was really, you know, for 1 year. That I thought I know this is that storm. It's like that. And then we moved to Vermont. Still, similar, not much change. The first time we visited Burlington was in the middle of a big snowstorm. We went to visit UVM, but we couldn't even see the road because of all of this snow. And it was so cold. But we still ate some Ben & Jerry's.
Construyendo vidas en América. Building lives in America.
I stayed on the Mardi Gras for a while. But eventually, Sheila and I got married. She was stationed in Panama because she was in the Air Force. I lived in Panama with her for maybe 3.5, 4 years. I got a job working as a waiter in the officer's dining room. After Panama, she got transferred to D.C. at the Air Force base there. She was pregnant and working. At that time, I got a job with the Red Lobster as a waiter, and then I'd be working at nighttime at a full-time nightclub in town. So it was work day, work night. So around then, we had purchased some property in Vermont. It's kind of funny how we got the property. We went to Barnett, her dad, myself, and I think mother was there too. So anyway, we were looking around for property to buy. And we drove down this Barnett Center Road, came upon this huge maple tree with a little sign tacked on it saying, for sale by owner. So her dad said, you want us to drive up there? And I said, oh, yeah, let's go look at it. So we drove up the hill there, got out of the truck, and looking around. And on the property was a ton of old cars. The yard was filled with sumac and all kind of bushes. I turn around and look over the other side of the road and these beautiful mountains. So it immediately reminded me of some property I have in Jamaica. The only difference was that down there, I'm looking at the ocean. Here, I'm looking at the mountains. Better of both worlds, I say. But so I said to her father, I'd like to buy this property. He said, are you sure? Referring to the way the place looked then. But I think I had another vision for it. So I said, yes, because this looks like a piece of heaven. So we bought the property. And it's amazing that now, come fall, all those flatlanders are parked on the side of the road, taking pictures of the mountain and the beautiful trees. It was then that I started selling shrubs at a farmer's market in St. Johnsbury. I started off very slowly, just shrubs, and then I started selling jerk rubs, jerk seasonings. I would make like little testers for people to try, just to give them an idea of what I'm selling. So it's funny. Every time they would taste the thing, they would say, whoa, can we buy this? And I always tell them, no, you can't buy it. It's my testers. It's only for tasting. After a while, I kind of thought about it, and I said, you know, I think what I'll do, I'll start cooking bigger portions and selling it. But the manager said to me, you can't do that. You have to have a license. So I talked to the license the inspector for food, and he said to me, well, Derek, you have to do this, this, and this before you can get the license. So I followed his instructions to the T. First time he came, checked my kitchen, everything was right, beautiful. So, and I got the license. By then, Shelly and I had 3 other children, Courtney, Travis, and Logan, plus the 2 boys from Jamaica. My big break came when somebody invited me to cook at the first night in St. Johnsbury.
Woo!
So, I went to my boss, and I asked if I could have the night off. I was told, if you doesn't come to work, word for word, you can leave. I said, okay, I leave. And it's amazing that night I served almost 500 people.
Yoo-hoo! Mm. Woo!
They put me in the first grade. I had a fabulous ESL teacher. And I took to language arts right away. Poetry was a language, the first language I could understand in English. Although I did struggle with a little bit of the euphemisms and the idioms, I took them quite literally. It's raining cats and dogs was especially terrifying.
Go, girl.
I think back then, ABBA wanted us to assimilate, take on the American culture. He kept trying to get Hoya to wear jeans. To which she responded, absolutely not. But he allowed us to wear jeans, my sister and I. And we wore our hijabs, but otherwise we dressed like little American girls. Eventually we did adapt. I remember one time I went to the mall with a neighbor kid, and I didn't tell anyone. When I got back, there were cop cars, and my parents were filling out a missing persons report. I got into so much trouble. When 9/11 happened, I was in the sixth grade. And I had a straight view of the World Trade Center just from across the river in my classroom. Everything changed. We weren't kids anymore. We became enemies overnight. People gave us strange looks on the train. Everyone was afraid. I didn't realize that that's the reason why ABBA moved us to Columbus, Ohio after, but it had to be. Columbus had the second largest Somali population and still does. And ABBA wanted us to connect with our culture.
I lived with my nurse friend who invited me for 3 months. And then our relationship turned very cold. She gave me two conditions. Return to Ghana or leave her house. I saw an opportunity to change my life in America and meet my children yet unborn. I moved out of her house. I became stranded. I didn't know anyone here. But I walked into a lady from Kenya who helped me make connections. I started working under the table, living with some friends. I went to schools to make presentations about Ghana. So I earned some money. There was a nice Montpelier couple. I still have connections with them 20 years on, who loaned me $1,000. And their money with my money was what I used to renew my visitor's visa so I could stay much longer.
Sir, please fill out form I-539, the application to extend or renew a B2 visitor's visa.
I then got a job at U32 Middle High School, who were willing to help change my visitor's visa to H-1B, which will allow me to work. So that was when I was offered a job there. The school district had to prove to immigration officials that I was the most qualified candidate for the position. So they had to advertise the position.
Sir, please fill out form I-129, petition for a non-immigrant worker.
It was a long, stressful days, weeks, and months waiting for my H-1B visa to be granted. There were no guarantees. When you're going through immigrations with visas, there's no guarantee. But the petition was granted after 6 months. And through that, I was able to bring my wife and then 18-month-old baby who is now at UVM as I speak. At U32, I observed several interactions because I work in a classroom, several interactions with teachers and their students. Through that, I developed a passion to become a teacher here. And based on my experience in Ghana as a middle school teacher. But then I had a change of mind because I saw how American children were kind of a little disrespectful to their teachers.
Ooh.
And the disciplinary strategies they were using, according to my observation, were not working. In Ghana, we were punished severely as children if we dared disrespect our teachers.
Mm.
So that was what I had in mind. That was what I knew. And so having observed teachers and their children in American classrooms, I realized that I could not be a classroom teacher in America. I might end myself in jail.
You get trouble, guys.
I had a change of heart and decided to become a physical education teacher based on my experience as a soccer player and an athlete. So I became a physical education teacher.
Sir, you again, please fill out form I-129, petition for a non-immigrant worker.
Again, stressful nights, stressful days, just waiting to get a visa to be approved. Sometimes you could even get denied and you may have to go back to your country. I had several thoughts as I wait for several other visas that I applied for. 2 years later, after I got my H-1B visa, I got my green card.
Woo! Sir,
nice. Yeah,
nice. I've got to warn you. I'm not going to make this easy on you. Please fill out form ETA-9089, application for permanent labor certification, form I-140, immigrant petition for alien worker, form I-485, application to register permanent residence, form I-765, application for employment authorization.
Is that all?
Absolutely not, but that'll do for now.
My older sister and I had always been very good daughters.
Yeah.
We got jobs at 16. We took care of our clothing, our schooling, and even our college applications. We also helped Hoya and Abba raise their 4 children. We were second parents to those kids. It was just the kind of responsibility that Somali parents put on their daughters. Maybe because we moved around so much as a kid, but I've always been attracted to newness. I especially stepped into myself when I got on the Ohio University, not Ohio State, Ohio University campus. I came back one weekend and I told Hoya and Abba that I was no longer going to wear the hijab. I said I was in a very firm voice that I was going to wear the hijab at the mosque to pray or when I went to visit Abba at one of his businesses. I know Hoya felt very abandoned when I went off to college. My nomadic spirit really scared her.
In 2008, we were settled in Dewey Avenue in Rochester. We heard gunfire every night, Between the electrocution and being held up by gangsters, my dad started manifesting PTSD and schizophrenia. Mm. He used to be so charismatic and resourceful, and now he cried in the middle of the night. Mm. He hallucinated that people with big swords were coming to kill him. Mm. We couldn't leave him alone in the house. None of us knew how to handle it. In Nepal, it was like mental health didn't exist. Mm. Nobody spoke about it. Finally, we spoke to another family, and they called an ambulance. My dad was hospitalized for a month. Somehow, I don't know how, all that time my mother managed. C has gone through so much. C is one of the heroes in my life. I started elementary school in the fourth grade. The bus picked me up. I would go to class. I would grab the papers they gave me and just stuff them into my desk. I had no idea what to do with them. I didn't know what was going on. They would provide an occasional translator for some tests, but not in the regular classes. Nothing really made sense to me. But I was able to get past fourth grade and fifth grade with the prior education I had received in the refugee camp. Like I mentioned earlier, our refugee camp was better than most. I did horribly in English, obviously, but I did really well in math and science because the standard of math and science education was of a higher level in a Nepalese refugee camp than it was in the U.S.
Oh.
I loved the education, but I felt out of place. I just wanted to assimilate as quickly as possible.
As I said, I got my green card in 2008. I spent over $25,000 throughout my immigration process from visitor's visa from Ghana through H-1B visas, several renewals until the time I got my visa. This was made possible through the support of generous and kind people in Montpelier. Mm. I felt at a time that maybe because I was the only person of color in Montpelier. Most times as I walk around downtown in Montpelier, I would turn around and see people staring at me. Because again, I was the only person of color. Our life was beginning to take off with my wife and then 2-year-old daughter then. But everything changed. Money, they say, is the root of all evils. My wife started working when we got our green card. And her lifestyle changed. We divorced in 2012. In 2013, I took my citizenship test.
How many amendments does the Constitution have?
27.
How many U.S. senators are there?
100.
Name one state that borders Mexico.
It's California, right?
Never mind.
All right, Uncle Sam, sir, this guy checks out.
I remember going through my citizenship ceremony at a courthouse in Burlington. I cried on that day. I cried because I was born into generational poverty. And here I was in the richest country of the world.
From Miami, we follow to Philadelphia. From Philadelphia to New Haven. We arrived November 5th, 2013. We didn't sleep that night. We were thinking about the future. The name of the United States is the biggest country in the world. We were in the dreamland. But we were also worried. Our caseworker told us that they will only help us between 3 and 4 months. That means we must start to build. We must learn the language, get a job, be active in our community. It was our responsibility. I didn't worry too much. What was most important was that we felt safe. Mm. After that, it was communication. When you smile, you can communicate. Mm. By sign, you can communicate. Mm. You can communicate in any time. Amir got part-time job, so I could study English. People were so nice. Americans helped us if we were on the bus and we didn't know where to go. One day on a bus in New Haven, a drunk person looked at me and said, "Why do you come here to America? Go back to where you come from." Before I could answer, the bus driver stopped the bus and told him to leave. 8 or 9 voices from the passenger told him to get off. Mm. I felt proud. Really, I felt proud of America. Mm. We want full-time job. We had bills to pay and wanted to support our families in Sudan. Amir works in Nebraska, in Slater House, for a while. In 2017, he came back and started driving for Uber and Lyft. Mm-hmm. I work part-time job at Whole Food Market. And I was student at that time. I got my certificate, double majoring in culinary and professional baking at Gateway Community College in New Haven. I don't worry that I'm not working in a bank. Mm. I know that in the United States, you must start from zero.
After my junior year of high school, we moved to Vermont. My dad wanted to be closer to his cousin. I applied for my mom to work at the custodial department of UVM the moment we arrived in 2016. I had figured out that was a way for me to get free education.
Woo.
We had all gone through the same kind of trauma, losing our homes, running away, being kicked out. That summer, I became interested in psychology. I got to do a mental health training in Iowa. I grew in confidence. I was the only high school student in the room. I graduated from Essex High School in 2017. That summer, I was working at a gas station to make a little extra money. And some people from the community, due to my experience with mental health training, recommended for me for a job at Spectrum Youth and Family Services. And even with my short resume, I was offered the job. And I still work there, by the way. I also, for about a year, I also ran a youth center at BPRW, and currently I'm studying psychology at UVM.
Good job.
Timba.
Oh,
yes. Timba. Me, Timba.
Okay. When we come, when we first came in 2015, we would go walking. We don't know what anybody is saying. Mm. We don't know anything. Mm. In school, I was scared, you know. I never spoke. I was not eating the cafeteria. I told my teachers, throw a translate me. I am scared. I don't know any the language. Mm-hmm. It's this difficult. Mm-hmm. For me, mm-hmm. I can make connection to the people. They say, this is school. You need most learn. You must focus.
Mm. Focus, Simba.
Yes.
Focus.
You must, what is reading, homework, anything. It was not easy. The teachers say, left, I got right. My teacher say, stand up. Me, I sit down. You know.
No. Whoa.
In another class, I did find. In English, I keep failing. The teacher said, keep trying.
Don't
if
give
you
up.
Trying, it will get better.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Don't give up.
I stayed in school. But I need to get a job. I started as dishwasher. Everybody knows dishwasher. In the farmhouse restaurant in Burlington, downtown. My friend is laughing at me because I'm working a dishwasher. You can imagine it? That I was dishwasher, but I didn't care for them because I was getting paycheck every week.
Yes.
Yeah.
I paid to get my driving permit at the DMV. I said to my teacher, I need to write the test. Well, you help me. The teacher, they said, no, you must do it yourself. Because it's the reason, because it's my test. I asked my friend my Senegalese friend to translate the study book in the French. I studied it in French. Then I studied it in English. Finally, I want to go DMV. They said, go to the computer. Watching myself inside the computer. I need 16 question pass. Look at the big problem here.
You can do it. You can do it. Just focus.
Focus. Timba.
Timba, focus.
I get 1 correct. 2 correct. 3 correct. 4. No. Wrong.
Focus.
5 correct. Right. 6. No pass. I was getting nervous. Finally, I get 16 answer.
Right.
Right.
Front to it. Woo!
I did it every finally finish to the test. I get up. I said, I'm passed.
Woo!
Thank you.
So beautiful.
Vermont is also home to me, which gives me the opportunity to share the story and give voice to Bidhin, an undocumented Mexican farm worker who cannot join us tonight. Yo soy de Chiapas, donde mis padres cosechaban habichuelas y maíz. En el tercer grado, dejé la escuela para mantener a mi familia, pero hasta como una adulta no habían muchas oportunidades para hacer dinero. Y pues, con la ayuda de mi hermano, me fui. Pero me fui con el corazón roto porque tuve que dejar a mi hijo y a mi hija atrás. I am from Chiapas, where my parents harvested beans and corn. In the third grade, I had to leave school to help support my family. But even as an adult, there were very few opportunities to make a living. So, with the help of my brother, we left. But I left with my heart broken because I had to leave my son and daughter behind. Por 8 días caminamos en el desierto. Por las noches no podía dormir porque oía los coyotes y temía que habían culebras cerca de nosotros. Por 2 días no teníamos agua ni comida. Teníamos que beber de los charcos. Yo usaba mi camisa para beber para que los insectos no se entraran a mi boca. En un momento, no estoy segura cuándo exactamente, entramos a los Estados Unidos. Allí nos recogió un carro que estaba lleno de tanta gente que algunos se tenían que sentar afuera. Durante el día nos escondíamos en una zanja porque sabíamos que la migra estaba en todos lados. Nos atrevíamos a guiar solo de noche con las luces apagadas. For 8 days we walked in the desert. At night I couldn't sleep because I could hear coyotes in the distance and I feared that snakes could be close by. For 2 days we didn't have food or water. We drank from the puddles. I used my shirt to drink through so that insects didn't get into my mouth. At some point, I don't know when, we entered the United States. There, a car picked us up that was full of so many people that some people had to ride outside. During the day, we hid in a ditch because we knew the Border Patrol was everywhere, and we only dared to drive at night with the headlights out. Mi primer trabajo fue en Carolina del Sur en un Sonic Burger. Un día, mi estómago me dolía tanto que no podía trabajar. El doctor me dijo que tenía suerte de estar viva. Mi apéndice se había roto y me tenían que operar inmediatamente. De ahí fuimos a Kentucky a trabajar en los campos de tabaco. Pero no nos trataban bien ahí y yo estaba embarazada. Mi tía me dijo que habían oportunidades en Vermont y pues nos fuimos. My first job was in a Sonic Burger in South Carolina. One day, my stomach was hurting so badly that I could no longer work. The doctor told me I was lucky to be alive, that my appendix had burst and that they had to operate immediately. From there, we went to Kentucky to work in the tobacco fields. They didn't treat us well there, and I was pregnant. My aunt told me that there were good opportunities in Vermont, and so we left. Yo nunca he visto la nieve antes, pero creo que es muy bella. Pero aquí hay demasiado de mucha nieve. Pero no nos vamos de nuestra casa frecuentemente porque la migra está en todos lados. Mi esposo le gusta aquí porque él puede trabajar regularmente ordeñando las vacas y haciendo lo que se necesita en la granja. Él trabaja todos los días, por 12 horas cada día. Y a mí me gusta porque tengo mucho más apoyo. Es mucho más fácil traer a mis hijos al doctor cuando lo necesito. I have never known the snow before, but I think it's beautiful. But there's a bit too much here. But we don't leave our home often because we know that Border Patrol is everywhere. My husband likes it here because he has regular work milking the cows and doing what's needed on the farm. He works every day for 12 hours a day. I like it because I have much more support for my family. It's much easier to bring my children to the doctors when we need it. En los veranos, yo soy parte de un proyecto de la comunidad cuidando un jardín. Me gusta porque me da la oportunidad para conectarme con los miembros de la comunidad y para ver a mis amistades. También estoy bien alegre para decir que mi hijo mayor también vino aquí a Vermont. Pero solamente 15 días después que llegó, lo arrestaron, lo detenieron, la migra. Lo cogieron y nos costó 10,000 pesos para sacarlo. Pero ahora él está aquí con nosotros y estoy bien alegre. Sin embargo, mi hija sigue viviendo en México y pues vivo con el corazón dividido en dos lugares. In the summers, I'm part of a community gardening project, which I enjoy because it allows me an opportunity to spend time with other members of the community and to catch up with my friends. I'm also glad to say that my oldest son is here in Vermont too, but Border Patrol picked him up only 15 days after he arrived. It cost us $10,000 to get him out. But now he is here with us, and I'm very happy. That being said, still, my daughter lives in Mexico, and so my heart will be forever split in between two places. La vida hoy, life today.
Now I've got my green card and I'm allowed to work. But after that, I check the mailbox every day. Because I have to work to support my family. I have never had to work before. Making music never felt like a job for me. But when I got to America, even though I was very famous in Madagascar, nobody knew my music. And I had to restart working.
Yep.
And I'm ready for that. The first job I did was to work at the Burlington Food Project. When I start thinking to find a job, back to my head, my situation when I was kids, I had a very difficult for education. So that's why if I got the job around the kids, to take care of the kids. My father was a teacher. He was a teacher, math teacher, and CIMI teacher. Then I start working for the public work. Then the beginning of summer, my boss told me, I got a job crossing guard. And then in the beginning of summer, my boss told me, Mika, you are a good guy. I love your work. I had another job for you, he said. Okay, I was really okay. Thank you for that. Painting line on the road. Yeah. It's not easy. I've never been done that. And it's dangerous work.
Yeah.
Car go fast. We work early in the morning before the business begins.
Business day.
It is dark. But I love it. I love it. Why? All the roads are beautiful. I'm happy to see it too, because I drive a car too. It's important. It's very important.
Yep.
It's very important. It's for the safety of the people.
Mm. Yep.
We came to Vermont before Ahmed finished his elementary school. And there was an opportunity for him to get St. Johnsbury Academy. Our friends, Robert and Allison, did all the steps to get this great opportunity for our son. It's my honor to say thank you to all the American people whom gave us their hands to start our life in Vermont. We decided as a family we would start again from the beginning. We said to Ahmed, our son, this is your future. It's your responsibility. You must work hard. And he said, I promise to work hard. We had so much support when we moved here in July of 2018. People are so nice and friendly. When I walk in my hijab, people say hello. I work at the hospital, Amir, as an Uber driver in Boston. We got our citizenship on May of 2019. We are starting to have American dreams. Ahmed will go to college. I will educate myself. My husband will get an education. We will be part of this community, guys. If you give more than you take, you can give yourself happiness. Maybe after many years, we will be able to go back to visit Sudan. But now we feel this is our home. Thank you.
I am now 67 years of age. I have two grandchildren, a boy and a girl. My catering business is doing extremely well.
Oh, nice. Good job.
Some people talk about retirement. And some of my kids are here, and my wife too, but I want them to understand one thing. Retirement for me is a foreign language. I am not considering that anytime soon, to be honest with you. I love to go cross-country skiing in the winter. I do some ice fishing also. But most of all, I love to fly kite. I build kites and I fly them. I love it. I go down to Jamaica maybe every couple of years, spend a couple of weeks down there. I have some property down there, so I'll go play around in the dirt, you know, tear some dirt around, plant some fruit trees. Pineapple. Last time I went down, I planted about 300-400 pineapple. You know, it's, I feel this very tight connection between this country and Jamaica. With the family I have here and the family I have over there, which I have a lot of family in Jamaica. It's fair to say I am the connection between all of this.
Oh, Timba has come back.
Timba.
In July, I got a promotion for my from dishwasher to cook.
Yoo-hoo!
It is not just cooking fries. It was difficult, you know. The first to cook, I don't like any cooking food. Yes, you know.
You want it ready, huh?
It's in kitchen.
Chicken.
Chicken, you know.
Chicken. Back, back, back.
Yeah. Mix fish, flowers. You know, fish flowers and irregular flowers. Mix it together. Inside, put salt. Look at the big problem here. My manager say, Timba, do this, do that.
Focus. Timba, focus.
Yourself. Thank you.
September of this year will be 20 years since I came to Vermont. I miss Ghana. I miss the food, especially the fish that comes straight from the ocean. Derek, you're 67 years old?
Yes, sir.
Next Thursday, I'm going to be 49 years old.
Could be my son.
It's hard to say I miss Ghana. But I raised all my three children here. So Vermont feels like home. Mm. Yeah.
I miss home a lot. The food, and especially my family. My mother, who is getting older, and a little brother. I would like to help them, but I can't yet. Thanks to my sister, who is able to send them a little money. They are a little bit okay. There is so much to get used to, but I have to do it because my life is here now.
Yep.
With my family. They're my family.
Woo! Yeah.
Yeah. Here is my life now.
Yep.
Here is my home. It is a good community, good people, and there is a music here.
Yeah.
There is where I need to make my life. Thank you.
I was living at a Zen Buddhist monastery in upstate New York when the 2016 election happened. followed by the Muslim ban, which is still in existence. I remember Hoya telling me that she wanted to take the kids back to Somalia, even though they'd never been. I remember crying with my sister about how it felt like 9/11 all over again. It did not feel like our country anymore. Derek. Yes, you. You.
Yes, boss.
I have a question. Do you know how outsiders are called flatlanders? What do the Northeast Kingdom people call each other?
I don't know. They call me Derek.
They call me Sahara.
They call me Emmanuel.
They call me Robin.
They call me Amal.
Oh, me? They call me Timba.
Timba!
They call me Mika.
Yep.
Yes, Mr. Mika.
They call me Vidhan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to selections from the storytelling project The Same Moon, recorded live at BPR in January. The Same Moon script was developed in association with Max Rainyard of The Telling Project. The show was directed by Ariel Zivon and Zara Ali and produced by Jay Craven for Kingdom County Productions, Catamount Arts, and KCP Presents. Kari Anderson produced this episode for Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.